Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen and children of all ages, we have lots to talk about today, from the NCAA Final Four to the Major League Baseball opening day. But before we start everything, we must say a hearty congratulations to my esteemed host. Because as of this show, well, it was a couple of weeks ago, but we'll take it as of this show. This is the first show where these millions and millions of female listeners are no longer entitled to call Seth Kamens and ask him for a date. He is officially off the market. But if you'd like to call for me, you're more than welcome to.
I'm not quite sure how to respond to that.
Thank you works very well. A thank you.
Okay. Hell has frozen over, and I have taken myself off of the market and quite happily so. And thank you, Sean, for that rousing, I don't know what that was, that, yeah, I am quite content. And my girlfriend is very sweet and obviously not listening to this because she wouldn't know basketball if it hit her in the head. But that's okay. So on to other things. I apologize for last week, everybody. We haven't had too many technical difficulties over the last year or two on the Seth and Sean show. Unfortunately, last week we did, and we were kicked off our show. I'd like to say it was in for something useful, but it wasn't. We don't know why it happened. Over the next couple of weeks, we're actually going to be changing off Blog Talk Radio onto something else, which makes me happy, so I don't have to front the entire Back Sports Page radio show. I don't have to pay for it anymore. Woohoo!
So, in other words, we're going to have a new dial-in, and we'll get that to you as soon as we can, because right now Seth and I are out of the loop, and we don't know it either.
Yeah, as those of you, as many of you know who listen to the show, this was based off of a website that was started by Randy Zellia and myself called BackSportsPage.com. And to be perfectly honest, as most of you who know me from a personal front, as I've grown my CPA and financial advisory practices, something kind of had to give, and my working with Back Sports Page has diminished greatly, and it's time to kind of go on and do other things. And it was great while I was sick, and I'll always be thankful for it, but that goes on. So on to some more important things.
You're not dying, dude. You're not dying.
I am not dying.
It just sounds like such a morbid conversational piece. We will live on. Seth and Sean lives on in perpetuity. And even after the millions and millions of female listeners come and go, we will still be here.
Listening to only the Syracuse alumni? Because I think that would be all who's left. And I think they're kind of rendered in sadness. But, well, maybe not at this point. It's been a week and a half since your loss to Dayton, which looked significantly better at Dayton, but of a pretty solid effort getting in the Final Eight against number one in the country, Florida. It has been one great tournament. I was really sorry that we didn't get to talk last week about it. Of course, this is the first year in 25 I haven't done a pool, and there's a reason for that, because I don't know a thing. My we're all
just
out
stop.
Before the final
just,
eight.
You don't need to continue with I don't know a thing, period.
Oh, thank you. I am supposed to. I am actually hosting a sports radio show, so I should probably know something. But everything that I did, every pick that I made, went absolutely and utterly wrong. And I am lucky that our bet is nothing more than. Well, nothing more than nothing. Not that I think you've really blown up the, either.
I figured it out while I was in the gym today. I got absolutely no Final Fours. Zero.
Yeah, I agree.
No, one of my Final Fours was out in the first round. So that kind of stunk. I did predict Kentucky beating Wichita, so I got that one. That's like one game, period, that I got. But other than that, here's the ironic thing. So I entered two pools this year. I generally answer two polls, one which I actually think about, and one which is basically chalk, which means I generally take the higher seats, generally. It's not all the time, but it's generally. In the one that I actually thought about, I'm dead last out of 79 people. The one that I didn't think about that I did chalk, if Florida beats Kentucky in the finals, I win the entire pool. For the first time in 30 years of doing pools, I'm going to win a pool if that happens. That's how much I can't pick a game. But I will take the money. I'll take the money. It's okay.
Don't we sound like people who should host this sports radio show? By admitting a sport that we actually know very well, and by stating that we cannot pick tournament pools brackets. I can't do it. I see no difference between the 5 seeds and the 12 seeds at this point. I think I picked all 4 12 seeds, and that actually was one of my some of the better stuff that I did. And if anyone wants to call in and talk about this stuff, as always, 760-283-0846. My favorite line actually of the first round was when Duke beat Mercer, and I posted a comment, said, hey, you know, Krzyzewski's been eliminated 2 out of 3 years in the first round. Time to look for a new coach down in Durham.
Well, one person took me seriously. Seth, we've discussed ad nauseum how much we are not enjoying college basketball because of the quality of play. But is that really a argument at this point? I mean, is it – now, I understand that the quality of play is probably not where it was in the 80s and 90s. I get that. But if there's enough parity where the quality of play is the same all around, does that not make basketball more exciting, and especially the tournament?
I think – well, wait a second. I think this has actually been a pretty good year in a very good tournament. This has been the best year in four or five years.
But I think it's been a good tournament because of the parity that's in college basketball, not necessarily that the play is fantastic.
I think the play has been actually pretty high, relatively high. I mean, that Kentucky-Wichita State game was fantastic. Actually, the last 3 Kentucky games have been fantastic. Wisconsin-Arizona was pretty high quality. Michigan State, Virginia was pretty high quality. I'm forgetting some of the earlier games because it's been a week and a half. But I thought this has been a pretty well played tournament. I mean, obviously certain teams bit the dust earlier than they should have and didn't live up to their potential. But I have no complaints, and I am always looking for a reason to complain.
No, that's certainly true. I think as we go forward, we see that the younger teams have gelled, and that because of that, you have quality basketball. Like Kentucky, if you talked to them, what was it, 3 weeks ago, nobody would have predicted this, no question, 4 weeks ago. Nobody could have predicted that they would go on this run. And Warren Buffett is the most brilliant man of all time because there was nobody that had a shot of hell in predicting this in this Final Four, let alone the entire tournament so far. But anyway, but even Florida, who is made up of predominantly underclassmen, has gelled, and they have come together, and they're playing their best basketball. So is UConn. Now, UConn's led by 2 seniors, Napier, and I can't remember the Gessler?
Shabazz Napier and Ryan Boatwright.
No, I'm not talking about Borek. I'm talking about the guy in the center, the Caucasian guy from Germany.
The Caucasian guy from Germany?
White is not the appropriate word, so I use Caucasian.
No, that's funny. I forget off the top of my head.
All right,
of all the teams, yeah, this is one of the bigger shocks that I can remember. UConn, the team I thought was going nowhere, having been beaten by 38 by Louisville in the AAU tournament, whatever it is, American Athletic Conference, whatever the new name of the conference is. A team I thought would lose to St. Joe's. A team I thought, and to be fair, if Iowa State was healthy, a team Iowa State I think would have beaten pretty handily. That's the one pick I'm not, by the way, embarrassed by. it's just been a great role for Kevin Ollie. And now, of course, now there are rumors that Jim Calhoun wants back. Not at UConn, of course, but wants back in the coaching realm. It's been a good run for a team that was really not particularly talented, and now they're playing Florida, a team they beat in December. Actually, the last team that beat Florida is the Gators, have gone on a 30-game winning streak.
Right. As I've watched the tournament, there's one thing that stands out. And coming from a Syracuse guy, I appreciate this more and more. And if you hit your free throws, you win. It's that simple. The only guy that I remember in the Final Four that has not hit, and I'm sure I'm missing a guy here or there, but has not consistently hit free throws is Dakari Johnson, who hits like 46%. Other than that, I don't think there's a major player on any of these teams that has shot under 75. And UConn, I think, has hit like 29 out of their last 30 from the free throw stripe.
Well, you make your free throws, you win. Plus the defense leads the final. They were not better than Michigan State. They weren't. They weren't a better team. And if they played 10 games, I think Michigan State would beat them 7. But Michigan State didn't play very well. Connecticut shot some ridiculous, I think it was about 85, 86% from the line, played really good defense in the second half, and between free throws and defense equals Final Four. And this is how they got to, 4 years ago, led by Kemba Walker. They were not a great team. They got hot at the right time. Now, I think the difference is the caliber of teams that they would be playing is significantly higher this year, playing number one in the country, Florida, than playing either Kentucky, who has just looked unbelievable in this tournament, or Wisconsin, who has also looked extremely good. And, hey, if they win 2 more games, they will have truly earned this national championship.
Yeah, there's consistency, though, because Kemba Walker, I believe at the time, and I can go back and look at this, which I will later, shot 90% from the free throw line during the tournament. You hit from the free throw line and you play good defense. Wisconsin's done it the entire tournament. You win games. Now, we should probably preview the last two games, at least the Final Four game and probably the championship game right now. I haven't believed in UConn all tournament. I still don't. I mean, I think they'll run end here. I think Florida's vastly better. And I think that they have the guards that can shut down Napier and Boatwright. But yet again, I didn't think they would get here anyway. So, I mean, who knows? I could be wrong. But I think defensively they shut them down, and they're in the national championship game.
I agree. I think Florida wins relatively easily. The other thing is you never want to look past the team. And not that I think a Billy Donovan team would ever do that. He's not that kind of coach that would allow that to happen. But remember, as I said, this is a team that beat Florida in December. Florida has looked – now, the only thing that concerns me about Florida is they have not really been challenged. They weren't challenged in the SEC for the most part, give or take the SEC final against Kentucky. They were not challenged. UCLA gave them a game for a while. But, Dayton made a great run to the 8. I do wonder how they will respond to a close second half if we're looking at something along those lines with 6 or 7 minutes to go. That being said, I don't think it's going to matter here. I think Florida is a better team. I think UConn's magic runs out. I like Florida by about 78-65, something along those lines.
Okay, so why don't you go to the second game?
The second game I think is going to be a blast. You have Bo Ryan's structured team, usually led by a great defense. This year, actually led by an offense with Ben Bruss and Frank Kaminsky, who absolutely destroyed Arizona for 28 points in the Classic Regional Final. I don't know how to believe in Kentucky. I didn't think they would beat Wichita State. They did. And Wichita State played really well, and they did. Didn't think they were going to beat Louisville. Louisville played very well. They found a way. I did think they would beat Michigan. I thought their athleticism would handle Michigan's three-point shooting. wasn't quite how it worked out, but they just seem to be on one of those rolls. And I think it's going to be enough to beat Wisconsin. I think as ridiculous as it sounds, considering the SEC has been considered by far the weakest conference of the power conferences in college basketball this season, I think we're looking at an SEC rematch for the fourth time. I like Kentucky. I think the game is close. I think eventually the athleticism of their guards, the shooting of the Harrison brothers and Young, that still makes me gag to say. Julius Randle is a monster. I think the key is, and if they can get Kaminsky into foul trouble, does Wisconsin have other scorers? And that I don't know. I like Kentucky 67-63.
Well, I like Kentucky even more than that. I think Kaminsky is going to be in foul trouble. I don't think he's their only scorer from what I've seen. Not their only scorer, but their only legitimate guy that can take out the whole entire team. Kaminsky is more of an inside-out guy, not a down-low guy. And Kentucky can play a zone. I mean, they played a zone the other day, and they played it very well. I think they'll be able to run on Wisconsin. Wisconsin's defense is very good, but only when they're set. They're not a great transitional defense. They were able to stop Arizona because Arizona didn't have any shooters. Well, if you watch the game on Sunday, Kentucky sure shot the ball well. And when they needed a shot, man, Andrew Harrison certainly came up with one. That was one absolutely unbelievable shot. It was like the Mario Chalmers shot a couple of years ago where my jaw just dropped and said, how did he do that? So
I guess I should be thankful I didn't get an IM 5 seconds before the shot took place.
So I'm picking Kentucky, and I think you're right. It's an all-SEC final. I think that's where Calipari's run ends, though. I think I win the pool, and I think Florida beats Kentucky. I just think Kentucky, while they are very, very good, and I wish some of these guys would come back, which probably will not happen. Florida's just a better team. I mean, hands down, they're just a better team. So I think Florida is one of the very few teams in the NCAA that could run with Kentucky. That's what's going to end it, is that Florida beats Kentucky. If I wanted to put scores, let's go 75-68. No, not even. 75-70. 5-point game.
I'll stick with the score. I'm going to flip the teams. I have not been as – Florida's defense is very tough. They're a good, not a great offensive team. And Kentucky just kind of seems to have that look of destiny about them. Julius Randle is a monster. Kentucky has played this team 3 times. They lost by 2 the last time. They've lost to all 3. It is difficult. You know, people say it's difficult to win 2 games over someone. It's more difficult to win 3 games over someone. I don't know if we've, except for the last time I can remember 4 teams playing in season. And again, it was actually my alma mater, University of Maryland versus Duke in the 2001 Final Four. And those are some of the best games, one of the best one-year rivalries you'll ever see. I just get the feeling it's Kentucky's year, and I shake my head as I say it. And to be honest, I have no interest in seeing any of these guys come back. I don't think the Harrisons are going to be drafted particularly high. I don't think a lot of these guys are in Kentucky. Parth Rice, I think he's a sophomore, but I think he'll go. James Young will probably be a mid-first-round pick. But I just get the feeling Kentucky's going to do it again. And, you know, like Calipari, hate Calipari. He plays by, you know, you can recruit everyone and done you want. That team is athletic. That team is talented. That team plays together now. I think it's Kentucky's year. Kentucky 75-70 over Florida.
Well, here's the thing. I think Randle has reestablished himself as one of those top 5 guys. I think his draft status was definitely going downhill. But in the Michigan game, that man dominated. I mean, he was, to me, I think the term man amongst boys is certainly overused. But in that game, that's all he was. He did everything he wanted. So
to be fair,
Michigan.
Yeah.
What's that?
But But Michigan also, remember, has been without Mitch McGarry. They have no particular inside presence. So it wasn't surprising to me that he was.
You play who's there. I mean, that's who's there. He'll play. So if he can keep that run going, I think he's back in the top five. He's a power forward. I think the Harrison twins, it'll be interesting to see whether they come back. Because of all the players that were in the early mock drafts, their status has certainly dropped the most. Their stature has definitely dropped the most. And in regard to James Young, he's coming out. He's a sharpshooter. I think he's probably 14, 15. So you're right. It'll be interesting to see whether they can do this. And if they win, I think they're all coming out. I think Carly Stein comes out, even though he's not going to play in this game. Poitras may come out. He may go back after seeing what Goodwin did this year in the NBA. But it'll be interesting to see whether Calipari – remember, last year, Calipari had Poitras and Carly Stein return. So do two guys return from this time as well? And if they do, where do they play? Are they on the bench like those two, or do they come back and play as starters? If it's the Harrison twins, it'll be even more interesting. But,
because Kentucky obviously recruits for one and done, so they have four or five new guys coming in, top 50 recruits. I'm not sure either Harrison would get a starting position, to be perfectly honest. Or I certainly don't think it would be guaranteed. You know, my assumption is if you go with Calipari, you go with the idea of being one and done. And I would think that they go. I'm curious. Carly Stein is almost a borderline lottery pick, although he has no offensive. His offensive skills are extremely limited. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But it's been a very good tournament. A tournament that's kind of rebuilt my image a little bit of the college basketball, because I've thought over the last few years it's really gone downhill the last 5 years. And I thought this year was better. And I thought this tournament was very good and has been very good. So, you know, it's almost over, but it's always missed. But, man, is it fun.
Yeah, you said it the best. You know what? The best thing about college basketball is while the players change, the team stays the same. And you keep your allegiance that way. So until next year, Orange, we'll come back with a vengeance. Terrapins, well, we'll see you. And
I'll tell you something.
In the Big Ten, anyway.
I'm looking forward to it. I think we have everybody coming back. We have a top five recruiting class. And, you know, if Turgeon, you know, as an always optimistic, quote-unquote, Maryland fan, you know, the Big Ten was very good this year, but most likely you're going to lose a lot from Michigan State with Payne and Gary Harris. You're going to lose from Michigan. You're going to lose Robinson. You're going to probably lose Stauskas. Mitch McGarry, who the heck knows? You know, Wisconsin is going to be Wisconsin. Ohio State, you lose Aaron Kraft and LaQuinton Ross. So it may not be the strongest Big Ten that we've seen next year. So it's a good year in the transition.
Well, you know it's not a strong Big Ten if Maryland's coming in.
I can't even roll my eyes at that comment at this point. Okay, so on to the next little endeavor that we have to talk about. And it's baseball time. And that excites me beyond worlds that you cannot even imagine. Now, I do look forward to baseball time.
Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Grab your peanuts. Grab your pie. Guaranteed to have the time of your life because the Mets are really sucking the ball, hitting those homers over the wall. Mets! Anyway.
Well, it was a typical beginning of the Mets season. They were beating Washington. They blew a lead. They lost in extra innings. And their closer is out for 3 months. Not the best way to start a major league season.
You know, before we get to that, I'm very surprised at you. I'm very surprised.
Why?
For a Maryland fan, you didn't even mention that you guys are in the Final Four or in the Final Eight.
We're in the Final Eight. That was going to be my last couple minutes. But, yes,
Maryland. I won't steal it. I won't steal it.
Lady LeBron has led us to the final eight. So in a grudge match against Louisville. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on. So it is baseball season, and that means a couple things. It means the Final Four is coming. It means we actually had a day of spring today. And it means tax season is over in 2 weeks. All these are good things. And while I am not the guy who's going to sit home for 7 hours on a Tuesday night in July when it's 80 degrees to watch 8 hours of baseball, it is nice. It is somewhat comforting that it is baseball time again, or pretty much, I guess we could almost call it six more months of Jeter. That seems to be all that's really discussed. Well, I guess where do you want to start? Do you want to start in the American League East? Or you just want to talk a little bit about...
Yeah, I think we should start in the American League East. I like your 6 more months of beer. For some of us that actually enjoy the sport...
I said six months of Jeter.
I think you said 6 months of beer, which also would go for you because you can't sit down and watch a game without a beer.
That's not true. I just choose not to.
A full game, start to finish.
I can, I just choose not to.
Right, exactly. There you go. Anyway, you're right. It is 6 more months of the captain. And I think the captain is not making the playoffs this year. I didn't think he was going to make them last year. I don't think I'll make them this year. The over-under for me is 87 wins for them, and I have them. I don't have them in last place. I don't have Boston in last place like I did last year because, you know, Seth and I totally predicted the AL East right last year. Where I think he had Boston last, and I had the Yankees last. But I don't have them making the playoffs. My order in the AL East, and we're not going to go through every team again because that was utterly ridiculous and took way too much time last year. But we'll talk about just, I don't know, who we think is going to surprise. We'll give some predictions, and we'll give our awards because I think that's really all you guys care about. So for my predictions, I'm picking Tampa Bay in first, Boston in second, the Yankees in third, Baltimore in fourth, and Toronto picking up the final spot in the AL East with Jose Reyes already pulling a hamstring on the first at-bat of his season. And I think Baltimore has a shot of overtaking the Yankees into that third place and maybe making the playoffs again, although not really sure. I'm not sure they have the pitcher.
I actually agree with you on three of the five. I have Tampa in first, winning the division. I have Boston in second. I have the Yankees in third. I just am flipping Toronto and Baltimore. I realize Baltimore picked up a couple pieces. They picked up Ubaldo Jimenez. They picked up Nelson Cruz. I still like Showalter a lot as a coach, but I'm not a big fan of the team. I've just never been a big fan of the team. I don't think they have the pitching or the hitting, to be perfectly honest, to keep up with any of those top three teams. Toronto, to me, remember we all picked Toronto last year. I just don't think they can be quite as bad as they were last year. I don't think you could have that many things go wrong again.
Well, they're starting off on a great run with Jose Reyes popping a hamstring on day one and already giving up 7 runs.
As I said, we're going from fifth to fourth, not from fifth to first. But I think that the Bucks, excuse me, shows me I'm either thinking nationally West or football season, I'm not sure which. But Toronto, remember, most of us picked them as the top two team in the division last year. Everything went wrong. You know, Josh Johnson wasn't able to stay healthy. They do still have a pretty decent staff, Ari Dickey, Mark Burley, and Brandon Morrow. They have, you know, Jose Bautista is a monster. Kobe Ramos is a decent player when his head's on straight. I don't love them, but I do like them. I like them in around 81 and 81, give or take. The top three teams, you know, everyone who listens knows these teams. Well, Tampa is probably the best run organization in baseball. I know people in St. Louis and Oakland will probably argue. Great talent, great pitching staff. Boston is Boston. You know, they've defending champions, obviously a good staff. You know, you have Xander Bogaerts going to be playing full-time. You know, I do like, you know, credit to Grady Sizemore coming back and actually winning the starting job over Jackie Bradley Jr. And the Yankees could end up anywhere from second to fifth, and I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I don't love their team. They're an older team. I think a lot depends on Michael Pineda, and that, to be perfectly honest, scares the heck out of me.
Yeah, I'm not a real big fan of Pineda. I'm not a real big fan of the whole Yankee lineup. The Yankee lineup is just so old. I mean, they did add a couple of pieces with McCann and Liddell, and I like those two pieces. But at the same time, their infield is awful. I mean, awful. And even more so, their defense on their infield. I think if you put you at shortstop and me at third, we'd have more range than what they already have. I mean,
I got pretty good range.
I don't care how much range you have. You could put your girlfriend at third base and you'd have more range than Kelly Johnson.
Wow.
I mean, it is awful how much range they have. Teixeira's an okay first baseman. Second base is Brian Roberts. Brian Roberts hasn't played more than 90 games in 3 years. Shortstop is Jeter, who, when he was healthy 10 years ago, had a pretty good range. And please don't tell me that those gold gloves were well-earned, because they weren't. And then at third base, you got Kelly Johnson, who hasn't played third base as a starter in like a decade. So I'm still trying to figure out, unless they strike out 1,000 batters this year, how that team is going to survive. But I guess we'll see. Like I said, 87 wins. I like their outfield. I like their outfield defense a lot, as long as Beltran's playing DH, not in right field most of the time. But we'll see. I mean, like I said, I'm picking Tampa Bay to go pretty far this year. So I got them in first place, and I still think you're right. Their pitching staff is the best, and even more so, I think they got the best manager in baseball in Joe Maddon, and that says a lot to me. So I think we should move on to the Central. So where you got going?
I think the Central is still pretty easy, to be perfectly honest. I think you're looking at Detroit. Yes, they lose Cecil Fielder. Yes, they trade Doug Fister for pretty much a bag of baseballs, a trade I don't particularly understand. They do bring in Ian Kinsler. They get a legitimate closer in Joe Nathan. I think they absolutely cruise to the division for like the umpteenth straight year. excuse me. I think you're looking at number two, looking at the youth of Kansas City. This is a team that they have, for years, we've been kind of hearing about all these rookies, all these youngsters. There's talent there. So they're catching James Shields, a nice pitcher. Alex Gordon.
I don't know if you can hear me, but we can't hear you, so stop moving around.
I'm in my office. It's loud here. So I apologize. So pretty much I was saying that like Kansas City is in fact
we still can't hear you. You are breaking up. It's not a matter of being loud.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you much better. This is not a Sprint commercial. Go ahead.
Okay. I like Cleveland in third. My starting of the run with Mark Shapiro and Terry Francona is in Cleveland. I think they took a little bit of a step back here off of last year, but there is some hope on the horizon with Cleveland for the first time in a while. I think Chicago is kind of stuck in nowhere land. Paul Konerko is finally gone after it feels like 50 years. Although a great career with him, I shouldn't say it in a negative connotation. Their ace is a stud in Chris Sale, but there's not much really to look at here. Well, I guess Konerko didn't leave. I thought Konerko retired. I know they brought in the first baseman from Cuba, Abreu. And Minnesota is a year or two away from being relevant. All their big names, Buxton and all these other, who's the number one prospect in the minors. Miguel Sano is another top five guy. They're about a year away, 2 years away from being relevant again. And I give Rundorn pretty much staying of course, because this after everything they did over 10 years previous, the last couple of years has been pretty hard. Must be pretty hard on them.
All right. Well, Detroit, I think, doesn't run away with the title, but they win it for all the reasons you mentioned. They have the best offense. They have the best offensive player in the major leagues in Miguel Cabrera. They lost Prince Fielder, but they have Kinsler. I like their defense a lot better, and really looking at Ricky Porcello to have a great year. Kansas City is going to make the playoffs this year. Predicting it now. Making the playoffs and coming in a close second to Detroit. It's all about pitching with them. Let's see if the pitching comes back. Third place is going to be Cleveland. Danny Salazar leads them. Not to the extent that they had last year, but Francona is one of the best. Still think he comes in there. Fourth place, Minnesota. They don't have great pitching, but they have decent pitching, which is much better than their pitching last year. They signed a couple of guys to basically be roster fillers, but I do like Kyle Gibson. Look for him to make a move. And then last place is Chicago. Canerco or no Canerco, that team is damn awful. They have no pitching outside of Sale. They have no relief. They have no defense. Abreu may hit 30 home runs, but he's also going to bat 230. And Adam Dunn is still going to hit 35 to 40 home runs and bat 200. So they're going to swing and miss team. They're going to be in last place, maybe competing with the Astros for the last place team in the majors. They are bad, like really bad. All right, let's move out to the West, where I think the Angels finally spend the right amount of money in Mike Trout. And how could you really spend the wrong amount of money on Mike Trout being the best player in baseball? And they finally take over and win this division. Artie Moreno spent a ton of money. Finally, they win. Oakland, although they're still cleaning out the crap in Oakland Coliseum, and I don't mean the players, I mean literally the crap, since the sewer system is so bad there. They can't wait to get to wherever they're going next. Hopefully it's San Jose. By the way, it marks the 5-year anniversary last week of the study into whether Oakland can go to San Jose. It's taken them 5 years to do that. Anyway, so Oakland's in second. Texas is in third. They get Prince Field. I don't think they had the pitching. It's that simple. Yu Darvish is great, but they lost Joe Nathan. Joaquin Soria is fantastic. Just don't think they have it. They lost Derek Holland for most of the year, after he tripped down the stairs, torn meniscus in his knee, problematic. Seattle's in fourth. Robinson Cano, way to go there. He got you $240 million, but, man, that's a step down. And then Houston, who will get probably the number one pick again for the fourth straight year. You know, I read this today, and perhaps you can tell me this, Seth, your opinion. What's the difference between the Astros, who are saving money, losing and getting first-round picks, or the Marlins, who are losing, saving money, and first-round picks? I don't think there's much of a difference, except the perception of the Astros is so much different than the perception of the Marlins.
Well, I think you also have to look at the farm systems. In Houston, led by bringing in Mark April from Stanford last year, has been consistently thought of as one of the best farm systems over the last couple of years, really building towards something.
They're consistently the best farm system because they have the number one overall pick ever.
Right, I understand that. But Florida, who's been right there for the last 2 or 3 years, is kind of in nowhere land because I don't believe, and you're more of an expert on this than I am, I don't think their farm system is particularly highly regarded.
Well, the difference with them is that they're bringing their prospects up. Their prospects are playing. Jose Fernandez was the rookie of the year last year. Jake Marchessault is playing left field this year. Christian Yeach is playing center field this year. While they're promoting them a little bit more aggressively. So they're cutting their teeth at the major league roster while the Astros are putting them in the minors to protect their service. So I'm not really sure that the perception should be any different. It obviously is.
Yeah, and you kind of, unfortunately, you actually took my exact order for the AL West. I do like the Angels this year. I'm not thrilled with their rotation. They did bring in Scott Kazmir, which, I mean, if you told me 2 years ago that bringing in Scott Kazmir would actually be a real addition, I'd kind of roll my eyes a bit. But actually, he went to the A's. I'm sorry, my fault on that. But they do have two really pretty much two borderline ones and two number one starters in Jared Reed and CJ Wilson. The question is, whether it's Tyler Skaggs, can anyone else pick up the fourth and fifth spot in that rotation? I can't imagine that Pujols is going to be that bad again this year. Mike Trout's the best player in the world. Hamilton can't be this bad. They brought in David Freese. It's a good team. I think they're a team that's just going to edge out Oakland. You discussed Oakland. Oakland is a team every year that seems to figure out a way to get by. Sorry, I can't get rid of the cough. You look at the team, there's no one of overwhelming – you don't look at this team and say, wow, there's overwhelming talent in any position except for maybe Cespedes in left or Josh Donaldson in third, but they seem to always find a way. They did spend a little bit of money bringing Kazmir and Jim Johnson. Texas will take a step back. I think Ron Washington, this will be his last year. They've had their chances, and as – I think bringing Fielder is a really good move. I think that, bringing Shinsu Chu will obviously be helpful, but I don't, that pitching staff scares me. As you said, after Yu Darvish and Tommy Hansen, there's not much there with Matt Harrison and Derek Holland on the DL potentially for a long period of time. Seattle is irrelevant for another year or two. They have Canelo, they have Felix. They don't have too much else. It's not really worth discussing until 2017. Hello? Sean? Did Sean disappear? Oh, I guess he got hung up.
I'm back.
Okay, I didn't realize you were gone, which should say something on itself. So you heard what I said? Pretty much I pretty much echoed your sentiment.
Yes, I heard that, at least.
Okay. You want to go to the National League East, I guess, or should you want to go through the playoffs for you for this first?
Yeah, let's go to the National League East. Who you got?
All right. National League East, I think, was a little bit of a surprise last year. Everyone and their mother took Washington to cruise. We all should learn that you can never count out Atlanta. And while I'm not counting them out this year, I do think the Nationals win the division. The pitching staff is fantastic with Strasburg, Zimmerman, and Gonzalez. Wow, I can't stop hitting. Their outfield with Harper, Span, and Worth is solid. Zimmerman's a stud. It's a really good team. I like them. I like the Braves in second. And I don't think there's going to be much competition for it. Obviously, they lost McCann, but they re-signed just about everybody else. Hayward, Craig Kimbrell, Freddie Freeman. This is a team that will cruise into the second spot and may challenge around the 90 with about 93, 94 wins for the division. I think the last three teams are relatively irrelevant. The Mets, to their credit, if Matt Harvey was there, I think would have a legitimate shot at a wild card spot. I think they're now a year away, but they do bring up Travis Dinard. David Wright is David Wright. You bring in Granderson. Your rotation is okay with Nice and Wheeler and Dylan G, but I think you're a year away. Philly's old. Philly's in the worst place of all of them because they rebuilt with old players, so they're expensive and they're over the hill. I see them around 70 to 75. And the Marlins, as you said, are much deeper. You have those Nationals. You have and you have a lot of people that were really, a couple of youngsters, Melch, a couple.
All right, well, Seth keeps breaking up, so hopefully he stops moving, because I don't know where he is, but he's breaking up like crazy. So, on to the NL East. Now we can hear you, but we couldn't before. So I'm on the NL East. I think the Nationals run away with it. Last year I picked them as my World Series contender. I'm going to do it again. And I think they absolutely run away with it. I don't think there's any contention from the Braves. None. Now, I say that every year, and every year they prove me wrong. However, this year, they lost Brandon Beachy. They lost Chris Medlin, both to Tommy John surgeries. I just don't think there's the pitching there. They did sign Irvin Santana, which is a great pickup for them, given what they had, but they just don't have the pitching. They did re-sign everybody, but they still have the two black holes in Dan Uggla and B.J. Upton. There is such a difference between the Nationals and everybody else in this division. So you got the Nationals, then the Braves, then the Mets, then the Marlins, and the Phillies are in last place. The signing of A.J. Burnett is a good signing. They do have a big three of Cliff Lee, Cole Hamels, and A.J. Burnett. But I don't think you're going to see Cliff Lee on this roster at midseason. I'd be surprised if you see A.J. Burnett on that roster at midseason. They're going to trade them away. Hopefully they can trade away a lot more because they got such an old team. Ryan Howard has three more years with $25 million. Chase Utley has three more years at 14 or 15. And Jimmy Rollins has two more years at 13. Three guys. Now, Rollins proved me wrong yesterday with the Grand Slam, but opening day should not be taken. You should not take opening day as your indication of the rest of the season. So, basically, that's my NL East.
You want to take that? You want to start with the NL Central?
I can start with the NL Central, and with the NL Central comes the St. Louis Cardinals, as they always do, because for some reason they are the only team that I have ever seen that really doesn't rebuild. They just reload over and over and over again. And they do it again, and they have some great prospects. So I'm going to take St. Louis number one. Excuse me. I'm going to take St. Louis number one. I think Pittsburgh's going to come on and do what they did last year. They did lose A.J. Burnett, but I think Gerrit Cole. And the prospect to watch this year is going to be Gregor Polanco, who will come up midseason and be the third in the Starling Marte, Andrew McCutchen, and Gregor Polanco outfield, which will win Gold Gloves, lots of them. They come in second. Cincinnati loses Chapman for 3 months. That's a big, big loss. I mean, huge. I do think they make the playoffs as the second wild card. I think they're in third, followed by Milwaukee, and then the Cubbies are in last. Again, we'll see you next year, Chicago. They have some great prospects in Javier Baez and Chris Bryant that are on their way up. But, man, their pitching is not there. They don't have any pitching prospects to speak of. They're in a lot of hurt if they're planning on just dealing with this team. They're going to contend for last place overall, too, along with Chicago and with Houston. I still can't get through thick skull that Houston's in the American League.
I wish I could argue your division, but I kind of see it the same way. The only thing I wonder is whether Chicago, I see very little hope in Milwaukee this year. When your ace is Kyle Loesch, it's not great. You know, Gallardo has not been what was hoped for as an ace. To kind of go through the teams again, is mute. St. Louis cruises the division. Pittsburgh keeps PNC faithful happy, making the playoffs for the second straight year. Cincy, as you said, losing Aronis Chapman is devastating. Milwaukee, I think, has become relatively irrelevant, which is sad because only 2 years ago they were a playoff team, and the Cubs are a year away from reaching mediocrity because they're not even close to that yet. Could you hear me this time or no?
I could hear that entire thing. And we got the NL West coming up, so why don't you hit that?
Oh, I think you have to start with the NL West. I think you have to start with the Brooklyn Nets. I mean the Los Angeles Dodgers, excuse me. Spending $687 billion on their lineup and pitching staff. Team is stacked. Led by all-world ace Clayton Kershaw, although he's injured right now. Zach Greinke, Dan Haren, Hyunjin Ryu, Josh Beckett will be their fifth starter, which is always pretty solid. When Matt Kemp may not make your starting lineup, you know you have a great team. It's almost funny to think a year ago Mattingly may have been fired from LA. It's a team with so much talent that I find it hard to imagine them losing. in losing this division. And then from, you go from one end to the other, the San Francisco Giants, you know, who won two out of the last three championships, two out of the last four, two out of the last four. Still a solid staff led by incoming Tim Hudson. You have Matt Cain, who's coming off a relatively disappointing year. Tim Wincecum, Ryan Vogelsong. You still have Buster Posey, one of the two best catchers in the world. Could they use a little bit more of offense? Absolutely. And that's why they won't catch the Dodgers. And third, every year I take them to do well, and every year they just don't. The Colorado Rockies. You know, they have pitching prospects. Jonathan Gray is finally coming up. You have all-world shortstop in Troy Tulowitzki. You have Carlos Gonzalez. You have Michael Cuddyer. It's a team that could threaten for the last playoff spot. I don't think they're there yet. In fourth, I have the Padres. A lot of young talent, but nothing really great in any position. And in fifth, I have Arizona taking a huge step back this year. Just a team I think overachieved quite a bit last year. And I think they did. I think they take a step back. And that's my NL West.
Yeah, I kind of agree with most of that. I mean, I don't think there's any shot that anybody beats the Dodgers this year. When you have a $240 million payroll, you should win at least the division over the course of time, and I think they'll do it again. I like San Francisco second because I love their pitching. They're hitting, well, they got Mike Moore, so we'll see if that works, but a full season out of Buster Posey won't be bad. And Brandon Belt has finally figured it out. So I got them number two, Colorado number three. You're right, Jonathan Gray coming, so is Eddie Butler. So they have some pitching on the way. Gray is a phenomenal talent. They just signed Justin Morneau to play first base along with Micah Dyer in the outfield. The trade of Dexter Fowler to the Astros was kind of bewildering, and I wonder if Carlos Gonzalez can handle center field, but I guess we'll see. The real basis for their entire season is going to be whether Troy Tulowitzki stays healthy. Fourth is going to be Arizona. You're right, they overachieved, but San Diego is not very good. I mean, they have a plethora of prospects coming up, but it's not going to happen this year. Arizona did import Mark Trumbo, who I think is the biggest hit or miss of any fantasy player in the National League. He's going to hit 40 home runs. He's also going to be Adam Dunn. He may not hit 200, and his on-base percentage is horrendous. I love San Diego long-term. I think their pitching is going to come around. Andrew Kashner is a 200 strikeout pitcher, but at the end of the day, they're still in last place. So my playoff teams from the National League, well, I think Washington makes it from the East. I said St. Louis and Los Angeles. So now you got three wild card teams coming. I think that Atlanta does make the wild card. I think Pittsburgh and Cincinnati make the wild card again. I think Pittsburgh is over San Francisco, so I think San Francisco is going to host the Reds, with Pittsburgh playing in the second round against the winner. Pittsburgh will play Los Angeles, then the winner of that will play the Nationals. The Nationals will play the Dodgers in the championship series, and then the Nationals will go to the World Series.
I'm just saying that because it's very similar to mine. I also like one team from each division making the playoffs. In addition to the division champions, I like San Francisco, Pittsburgh, and Atlanta. I'm not going to go through each divisional playoff. I like Washington over the Dodgers as well in the National League Championship Series.
Okay, so now in the American League. So in the American League, I have Tampa Bay winning that division, Detroit. And I said the Angels, the wild card teams, Oakland, Kansas City, and Boston. The Yankees are shut out of the playoffs again, which doesn't make me all that unhappy. Actually, it makes me thrilled. I think the worst of those teams is going to be Oakland this year. Oakland is going to face off against Kansas City in the play-in game. I think Kansas City wins that play-in game. Kansas City will then lose to Tampa Bay. And Detroit will then play Boston, which is going to be a hell of a series. Detroit, I think, wins that. I think Tampa Bay beats Detroit, and then Tampa Bay is going to the World Series for a Tampa-Washington Nationals World Series, which just sounds awful.
It really does. I'm relatively similar, but because I don't want to choose the same teams as you, I'm going to go a little bit different. My wild card teams are Oakland, Boston, and yes, the Yankees. Because I find an incredible thought of the final game Derek Jeter ever plays is a Boston Yankees wild card game. I think would be quite funny. It would be funny either way. I like Detroit.
Well, you do
understand
that his last regular season game, I believe, is in Boston anyway.
Yes, I am aware of this fact. I like Detroit over Tampa Bay, and we have a World Series of Detroit and Washington.
And who do you have winning, Detroit or Washington?
It's time. Led by Brett Ausmus, led by Miggy Cabrera, led by, I guess, the second best pitcher on the planet in Justin Verlander, and something that really increases Max Scherzer's salary demands for free agency. I like Detroit over Washington in six.
I'll tell you, if it is your scenario, I do pick Detroit over Washington. And in my scenario, I pick Tampa Bay over Washington. I think Washington's really good. I really do. I don't like the back end of their bullpen very much with Rafael Soriano and Clippard and Storen. I don't like that bullpen. I also don't like the fact that Wilson Ramos is now out for a little bit, but I do like Tampa Bay, led by their pitching staff and the best manager in baseball in Joe Maddon, over the Nationals. Now, who do you got for your MVP in the American League?
For the last 2 years, it's been a two-man race. For the third year in a row, it's a two-man race. For the last year, I took the guy I thought should have won. He didn't. I'm going to take him again. The best player in the world is Mike Trout.
I agree with you. Third time's a charm. I don't think unless Miggy wins another triple crown, I don't think they can give it to Cabrera. And if the Angels actually do win the division, there's no reason that Trout doesn't win it this year. None. Now, here's my sleeper pick. If Kansas City can do what Kansas City says, what I predict them to do to make the playoffs, they will have to have an extraordinary effort out of Eric Hosmer at first base. So there's your secondary pick. So go ahead.
My secondary pick, and I guess it's kind of hard to say he's secondary, but I'm also a believer that anyone who is a MVP candidate should at least be in the running for the playoffs, which is the only argument I had against Mike Trout last year, is I'm going down to Tampa and going with Mr. Longoria, who's probably the best third baseman in the world.
Probably true. Okay. So Cy Young in the American League.
Well, we've gone excuse me. I think there's a lot of pitchers you can throw out there. Obviously, you have the two in Detroit, Scherzer and Verlander. I'm going to go with neither. I'm going to go with the pitcher that's going to vault California to the division title, Jared Weaver.
Okay, I think you're smoking something really good if you think Weaver's going to win a Cy Young, because he's played off of his reputation for such a long period of time.
At some point, you don't think he lives up to it?
I don't believe in Jared Weaver anymore. I think his fastball is down. I don't think he has the skills. If anybody on that team is going to lead that team to a division, it'll probably be C.J. Wilson. But I'm not picking either one. Justin Verlander, to me, is the best pitcher in the American League, and he may be the best pitcher in baseball. He may actually be better than Kershaw. I think he does more for his team. I think he leads them in more innings. I think he never gets hurt. He's the man. Justin Verlander for Cy Young again. And if he puts up the season that I think he's going to put up the season, he may be in the running for MVP again. But the difference is you have Mike Trout. So there you go. Rookie of the year.
In the American League, I'm going to go with the most obvious pick, and that's Masahiro Tanaka. And the Yankees.
I agree with you. I don't think there's another pick I can make right now. So I would definitely go with that as well. So National League MVP.
National League MVP. I mean, easy way is to go with Andrew McCutchen again, who's right there. I'm going to go with a player that is always mentioned but never wins it. But he's considered probably one of the two best in the world at his position, perpetually underrated. In the last couple of years, he's starting to get it. So I'm going to go with Yadier Molina in St. Louis.
Okay, I love Yadi. You know I love the defense. I absolutely love Yadi. But that's not who I'm going with. I think another guy that's perpetually in the MVP discussion but has yet to put it together, and I think this guy puts it together this year for the Cincinnati Reds, and Jay Bruce. I think he leads the league in home runs. I think he hits about 290 and has 140 RBIs because he's sitting right behind Joey Votto, and he's the guy. Cy Young for the National League. Do you go away from Kershaw?
It's really hard to go away from Kershaw. I'm trying to think of who else I would really put up there. The only other name that comes to mind is Adam Wainwright, who is probably the most underrated pitcher in baseball. But to be honest, kind of like I went away from Verlander, to be honest, because I just wanted to go away from Detroit. I find it very difficult to go away from Clayton Kershaw unless the injury lasts longer than any of us anticipate. So I'd go with Kershaw.
Well, I'm going away from Clayton Kershaw for many reasons. First of all, sometimes the voters just get tired of giving it to the same guy over and over again. I call that the Karl Malone syndrome. So I think this time it goes to Jordan Zimmermann of the Washington Nationals. I think Strasburg has a great year, but I think Zimmermann has the year. If he wins 21 games, which I think he will, he wins that Cy Young. Rookie of the Year in the National League. Do you have a Rookie of the Year in the National League?
Wow, that wasn't necessary.
No. There aren't a lot of great rookies in the National League.
No, there's a few. You can go with Wong out of St. Louis or Billy Hamilton in Cincy. I'm going to go with the catcher from your New York Mets, Travis Darnot.
Get the name right. Darnot. And I will agree with you. I think Darnot is the guy because I don't see a lot of rookies. I love Billy Hamilton's speed. I just hope he can hit enough to get on. And there aren't a great many rookies in the National League that are coming up right now. You may see a Jonathan Gray eventually. You may see Archie Bradley from Arizona. And they're 0-3, so they may need Bradley even bigger now. I think he's the guy. If there's going to be a pitcher that takes the team by storm, it'll be Archie Bradley. But other than that, there aren't no regular starters. Maybe Christian Yelich of Miami. There aren't no, or Corey Ash of Philadelphia. There aren't many starters that are rookies this year. So I don't think that it's anybody but Darnot. So why don't we wrap it up? We did this in record time on MLB preview. But here's my question to you. Who's the surprise guy this year? Who do you think comes out of nowhere and has a great season for those that are unaware of Major League Baseball? And I guess who are not fans like yourself. Well, not really sure that.
I think you have to go to one of the obscure – let me think for a second. I guess you have to go to one of the more obscure teams. You go to a Kansas City and Salvador Perez maybe. You go or Cleveland. I mean, Carlos Martinez is kind of known. He's busy, so I guess that's kind of a hard way to go. Are you looking for a guy who's been playing for a couple of years?
That's just not well known. I mean, Carlos Martinez was in the World Series, so I assume he's pretty well known. I'm looking for guys. Why don't I give you my two, and you can go from there? Does that work? So
sure.
That'll give you a little bit more. I like Garrett Cole of Pittsburgh, who was a first-round pick, fourth overall. But I think he puts up 18, 19 wins this year. Last year was his rookie year. I think he really comes on strong, and this is the year that he breaks out. Now, you could put Jordan Zimmermann in that same bucket, being the fact that he's on the staff with Fister, Steven Strasburg, and Gio Gonzalez. But I like Garrett Cole as my guy in the National League. If you're looking in the American League, you can look at Danny Salazar of Cleveland. You're right, Salvatore Perez of Kansas City. I mentioned Eric Hosmer, but the guy that I think is going to lead Tampa Bay is not going to be Evan Longoria. It's going to be the rookie of the year from last year in Will Myers. Will Myers had more since when he came up, from the time that he came up to the end of the year, he had more extra base hits than Mike Trout. That's incredible to me. He's your guy in Tampa Bay, and while Kansas City and James Shields do make the playoffs, I think they're going to rue the day that they traded Will Myers for James Shields.
I think they rued that 10 minutes after they made that trade. I understand what Dan Moore is doing against City, but Will Myers has been a big prospect for years. I guess the guy that comes to mind, and he became pretty well known last year because he was in the World Series, Michael Wacha, who is going to go from being kind of a fringe, I guess, a rookie starter to really a bona fide number two behind Wainwright, would be the name that kind of comes to mind in that realm. You know, the other one, and again, it's a big. He actually has to start, but the superstar rookie, Oscar Tavares from St. Louis, if he can break the lineup, which is going to be difficult. Now, another name or two. Actually, a name again, an old World Series hero, who kind of has to reboot his career. I'm not sure there's a worse place. I'm not sure there's a better between Albert Pujols and Mike Trout, Dave Freeze, who's out in California. These are the guys that I think of when you're talking about guys who are going to take a big step up this year.
Great. All right, so we got our let's wrap it up. So talk about your Lady Terps.
Yeah. As most of you know, well, as all of you know, obviously, I went to the University of Maryland, and while I'm not the world's biggest women's basketball fan, I did have the opportunity to watch Maryland absolutely destroy number one Tennessee, led by Alyssa Thomas, or the ladies LeBron, as they're calling her, with 32-8. They're playing now, actually. One of the real hatred between them and Louisville, they're playing right now for the Final Eight. But as much as people complain about women's basketball, and I'm not the world's biggest fan, the idea of watching an undefeated Connecticut versus undefeated Notre Dame for the national championship would be pretty amazing, and I think would really be worth watching, no matter what kind of sports fan you are. So if that happens, of course, I hope it doesn't, because Maryland somehow gets to the finals. Check it out. That's all I got.
Well, I've spoken many times before that I actually feel that women's basketball is played better than men's. I think it's a better fundamental game. I think that it's not as much about athleticism, because they're not as athletic, than it is about the basketball itself. I think the basketball is definitely, when you talk about a more pure game, women's game is definitely a more pure game than the men's game. So I actually enjoyed it when I was at Syracuse. I enjoy it today watching women's basketball. It's good stuff. So for my finale, my question is, and I'll ask you this, Seth, because Tiger Woods out for the entire majors this year. He's not going to play in any of them. He's having back surgery. Now, Stefania Bell was on ESPN. She said that 90% of the people, 90% of the athletes that come back from that have this type of surgery come back as good, if not better. This is just a long line of things that have happened to Tiger between his ACL, between his marriage, and now this. Does Tiger win another major?
I believe so. I don't know. I don't think he breaks Nicklaus's record of 18. He's 38 years old. He's got another 10 years of being relatively competitive. I have to think he's going to win one or two more. Would I should be shocked if he didn't? No.
And has there been, I mean, we've, a couple of years ago, Tiger Woods was on top of the mountain. I don't think I've seen many people fall as quick. Well, you can say Michael Vick probably fell as quickly, but there haven't been a lot of people that have fallen as quickly as Tiger Woods. And I'm not saying financially, because obviously he still makes his money, but from overwhelming favorite in most majors to now, you know what, I don't consider him a favorite at all. It's just been a surprisingly awful, you could say, stream of luck. You can say he did it unto himself, but, man, 5 years ago we were talking about this guy is the greatest golfer of all time, and now look at him. He's going to miss the entire year. He comes back at age 39 with a bad back. Reminds me a little bit of Freddie Couples.
No, except he had 13 more majors than Freddie Couples.
Oh, agree.
And Freddie Couples never quite had the discipline or the I don't know if anyone really had the discipline that Tiger Woods had. And
Or has. I mean, look, I'm not saying he doesn't come back. I'm just I don't think he breaks that record, and we'll see. So next week we'll talk about the Final Four and see how wrong both Seth and I both are again, and now we can't pick a game to save our lives. And we'll start talking about the NFL draft, which is less than a month away. So for Seth Gamis, this is Sean Palmer, backsportspage.com, perhaps for the final time. And kudos to Seth on the goal. We'll see you next week.
Aww. Aww. Thanks. Good night, everybody. Bye.
Night.